Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here on this Friday night from the El Pacifico. Truth is our bitch. That's what we like to say. Welcome to our late-night thing. We're here till 1 o'clock in the a.m. on the Pacific Coast and 4 a.m. out on the East Coast. And all that other math can be done in between in what they call, and I call you this, those of you who are at this place, with great affection, fly over America, because I didn't fly over that part of America. I took a train across that part of America. What do you think about me?
I guess that's good.
Yes, no, that's...
Yeah, see what I'm saying? You guys, you don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I know what fly over America is.
Yeah, I know you know what fly over America is, but I just said to you that I didn't fly over America.
You took a train over America.
Yeah, don't you understand the significance of that? The significance of that is that I, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn here.
No, no, not at all.
Well, no, I'm not, Margaret. What I'm trying to say is I'm just using as an example just one time in my lousy life, one time in my dirty, stinking life, where I said, I don't think I'm going to fly over. I think I'm going to...
train over.
Yeah, because that way you can see what's going on, man. And it was a lot of fun. It's the best trip I ever took. I'm glad I did it. I recommend more people do it. Honest to God, I do. You know, you can get on an airplane, you fly, you go, and you land. Now you're and you don't feel like you've done anything but get into this aluminium tube, and you sit there for 4 hours or 5 hours, and then you get out of the tube, and you're in another place with a different climate, different buildings, different people with their different accents. And
well, Phil, we're only talking about going from Los Angeles to New York. You're not going to China, you know?
Yeah, not like you're going to where they speak Gaelic.
To where they speak Gaelic, huh?
Yeah. Well, that's Ireland. Yeah.
It's Ireland, yeah. You didn't know that?
I didn't know where they speak Gaelic.
Yeah, they speak Gaelic in Ireland, although I don't think they speak Gaelic in Ireland anymore.
Well, it's a dead language. It really is.
No, and it's not a dead language. I mean, there's people that still maintain, try to keep these languages alive, Gaelic and some of these others. I think there's even a native Scottish language.
But you mean like Scotland?
Yeah.
Well, what are you talking about, a native Scottish language?
Well, there is. I think there's a native Scottish language.
Yeah, it stands to reason because when you're Scottish, you go nitter, nitter, you know, like that.
What did you just say? He didn't say the N-word, okay? He's trying to roll his R.
Roll his R? Can we? Let's get real. There's no Scottish language.
I think there is. Bud is giving an example here. Like the Scots, they talk like this and everything's with the tongue like that and they, you know.
Well, so what? So maybe that's just the way they learned how to speak English.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't learn how to speak English. There's nothing in the English language to make you roll R. Yeah, there's nothing in English that makes you go...
What is he saying?
I think he's making a point, albeit clumsily, that how come the Scottish people talk with all this stuff here and they're talking with... You know what I mean? You know?
What are you looking at me for, Margaret, like I just came off of, the flying saucer or something? You guys are not making any sense at all. They speak English in Scotland. They speak English in Ireland. I know there is Gaelic in Ireland. But I've never heard of any Scottish language. No Scottish language that I know of. And you're saying there must be a Scottish language. Why?
Because of the way they talk. Because of the way they talk. If they speak English, and yes, they do speak English, but why are they sitting over there going, here, you know, I'm talking like, well, that bull crap, you know, that Bonnie Bonnie Lass BS?
The Bonnie Bonnie Lass. Oh.
You know what I'm saying. Go ahead, call Frank. You always call Frank.
Well, I will call Frank to see what it is that...
I got a line here from... okay, here it is. Dan just says they speak Gaelic. Gaelic is Scottish. That's what they speak in
Gaelic.
In Scotland.
Yeah, no, they speak Scottish and Gaelic.
Where?
Gaelic.
No, Gaelic ain't a where, it's a language. And that's what they're speaking in Scotland, just like they're speaking it in Ireland.
No. Not buying it. No way.
All right, Bud, look, you brought up a good point. Doesn't mean you got to beat it into the ground to make it yours. I know you want to own this point, and I know that you want to make sure that we are thoroughly and completely developing it, and as we do, it's yours. Okay, but don't beat it into the ground so there's nothing left of it, man, so it looks just like a puddle of tomato bisque, okay?
But wait a minute. You're saying a Gaelic, Scotland is Gaelic. Why do they say never, never, never?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Now he's just being an exhibitionist.
I recognize there's a different accent. There's no question that the Irish accent and the Scottish accent are different. I'll tell you one thing right now. Scotland, after they had, there was a terrible event in Scotland that you guys remember. The terrorists tried to blow up the airport there. Was it Edinburgh?
Oh, yeah. That car drove right on the side of it.
Yeah, and they tried to blow it up. They interviewed a couple of people at the airport. One or two of them, I think, were baggage handlers. Maybe there was one or two others that were working at a ticket counter. But, man, I couldn't understand a thing the guy was saying. And he was just like, "Better teach it and give it a go to the laboratory and the word and bunny lass and the eagle like that." I was lost, man. And there's only one other country where they speak English that it's Scotland and Jamaica. Those two countries, they speak English. I can't forget it.
And yet you said your girlfriend at the time could understand.
Yeah. Yvonne could understand. Now, don't give me this bull crap because she was black.
Well, what else could it be, Phil?
I don't know. But don't give me this stuff. I think it's because she's used to listening to her. These were all her cousins. My girlfriend at the time was a young black lady named Yvonne. These were her cousins. And we went to Jamaica for a family reunion, okay? Now, all these cats are sitting around with them. Yeah, man, I'm going to go to Daly Fee and go down to Kingston and like that. I was lost, you know. She understood every word, you know.
Yeah, bitch, you automatically thought on account of she had black eardrums. There's no such thing as having black eardrums, man.
What do you mean black eardrums?
Well, why is she going to understand it?
I'm not saying she had black eardrums, but why did she understand?
I think I just told you, because she's used to listening to them. Her parents were from Jamaica. So she heard the Jamaican accent all through her life growing up. And she was able to negotiate a lot better than a guy like me. You want to talk about somebody having eardrum, you know, a colored ear? I got white eardrums. How about that? Or no, I got American eardrums.
What's she got?
She had American / Jamaican eardrums. Bud, you've got, what do you got? I don't know what eardrums you got, man.
Martian.
Yeah, I got Martian eardrums.
Yeah.
Okay. So the next time we have a visitor from Mars... So in any event, I couldn't... So there's only two countries in the world that speak English, and I can't understand hide nor hair, and those are the two. And the rest, I think I'm pretty good with. But man, when those Scottish guys get going with that Gaelic, oh, baby. All right. World-famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and we are online at philhenryshow.com with a backstage pass. You, yes, you, and only you, well, actually anybody else that's listening... can have access to thousands of hours of our radio show. We have an archive that is the largest in the known world. If you like radio, if you like funny, forget about radio. If you like to laugh, if you feel that laughter can heal as we do, if you want to join our religion of Laughtronica, I am the Grand Way High Lama.
Now, this is something you announced today on Facebook, right?
Yeah, this trainer announced that he's the Way High Lama.
Exactly. I'm the Grand Way High Lama of the new religion of Laughtronica, and we are seeking the laugh, not L-A-U-G-H. That's laugh, but we seek the higher level of laugh, which is L-A-F-F. Okay?
Oh, God. What are you going? Oh, God, can't you have a... No, this is just... We're having some fun.
And so this religion, which, see, I'm reading a book on Scientology, and I'm reading how brilliant L. Ron Hubbard was. I mean, he truly... was a brilliant guy from this standpoint. He took Dianetics, which was the first book he wrote, and it was all about the mechanics of good mental health, and he decided, well, the Dianetics thing is fine, but it didn't really hit the mother load like I wanted it to, you know, which is the combination of money and my name on it. So that's when he came up with Scientology and turned it into a religion, and that's when the real money started to be made. Now, I'm not thinking I'm going to make any money, but I think it's about time we had a religion based on laughs, don't you?
Well, a lot of people are going to say...
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of people think that religion is based on laughs. Isn't that... Wouldn't you agree with that, that religion's based on laughs?
No, I don't think a lot of religion's based on laughs. I think a lot of religion's based on a lot of stuff. I don't know of any where the actual...
Well, Phil, I'm kidding. I'm being sarcastic. I'm being facetious. God.
Yeah, I think he's just trying to be facetious.
Oh, okay. I know you're being facetious. I'm saying I'm being serious, okay? You're being facetious about a religion based on laughs, and I'm being serious about my laughter, okay?
Whatever.
So anyway, that's what we decided today. Nothing too heavy, just thought I'd let you know that. as we begin to, you know, formulate the liturgy of our religion. We will certainly be mailing out invitations to select few. I don't know. We'll give you the opportunity to join. And the dues will be very reasonable.
So that's how it's going to be played.
Maybe. Maybe it will. So that's going on. We also have another rehearsal under our belt of the one-man show. We have, as you know, the Bobby Dooley podcast out with part two of Joel McHale. We had another daily podcast out, episode 134. Today, we got two more podcasts that are planned. They're going to be a rockin' good time. And God knows what else as we progress here on toward the summer months. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. When we come back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show, we got some news on world of sports, because more and more, I'm getting interested in the world of sports in terms of how I can make my money there. What is all this stuff, bud? Well, I do know we have some controversy involving Tiger Woods and Serena Williams. Was she taking pictures of him while he was golfing, or was it some other private event? We'll see. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Here, man. Anyway, welcome back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL and online at philhenryshow.com. So Serena Williams busted taking pictures of Tiger Woods golfing. Didn't know that was against the rules, but tennis pro Serena Williams learned a valuable lesson today. Don't take pictures of Tiger Woods while he's trying to golf. The number one ranked tennis player was attending the Honda Classic in Florida as a spectator Friday when she tried to snap a quick picture of Tiger Woods with her phone. Well, guess what, man? You don't do that. She had her phone taken away from her.
Why?
Because you're not allowed to take pictures of Tiger Woods. I guess when he's golfing.
They can't do that legally, can they?
Well, I think they did. Unless somebody wants to file a massive lawsuit. I think it's... Well, number one, you know, picture-taking can be noisy. I don't think with the modern phone cameras, you know, with the kind of digital equipment we have now, you're not going to be making the noise. At least the average spectator is not going to be making the noise cameras used to make. I don't know about professional photographers. They're still probably using fairly traditional equipment, I would think. You know, do you know anything about that, Margaret?
Well, I know that a lot of the photographers now, you know, everything is motor drive. I don't know that they're noisy. I think they're probably a lot quieter than they used to be. I think that they still maintain a respectful distance and a respectful quiet for the golfers that are about to hit the tee or...
Tee off.
Or tee off, thank you. But I don't know. My brother golfed briefly on what they called the mini tour.
Oh, he did?
Yes, the mini tour. Do you know? You know more about it, don't you?
Well, the mini tour, I think, involves dates in Mexico, some of the lesser courses smaller courses in the United States. I think it's just a cut below.
Yes, it's not the PGA, is it?
Yeah.
No, it's not that. It's the mini tour. And Tiger, which was my brother's nickname, by the way, Tiger. Tiger what?
Hold on. Your brother's nickname was Tiger.
Yeah, that's coincidental, don't you think?
Well, no, I don't think. I think it's coincidental that Tiger Woods is named Tiger. My brother's been around longer than Tiger.
And his name was Tiger.
Yeah, his name was Tiger Kenny. That's my maiden name, Margaret Kenny. And if those of you that follow the mini tour, you may know the name Tiger Kenny. He was a fairly... I know he used to take my father out on the course and just give him a what-for beating. And my father insisted on betting.
So your brother would take your father for money, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was one way of coming home for vacation and getting some money. But I didn't like golf. And there was an incident...
There was an incident of what?
Yeah.
I got angry at Jason J. Delmonico. I had come in from golfing And this was when Frank and I had been married for a few years. He asked me to get into golf. Frank liked to golf.
Right.
So we went out golfing one afternoon, and we came back. I was very angry at, for some reason, Jason J. Delmonico had left his books, and he had left something laying in the living room, and I told him not to do it. So I took out this three-wood, I think. It was a three-wood. It was a wood, a driver. And I, for whatever reason, began to very quietly hit these books through the window in the living room. Broke the entire window, and the books were destroyed. And then I remember Jason J. coming downstairs with some game controllers, and I teed those up.
Boy, you were angry.
Yes, it was anger, but it was also frustration at not doing well. It was also practice, you know.
You took the club to him?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I teed these things up as if they were golf balls.
You know, I got to tell you, Margaret, and I don't mean to tell you your business.
Here we go.
No, no, not here we go, but I mean, you're the one that brought this up. I've noticed, and I've told you this, that you have, you talk about an anger problem. This is the same kid, your son, that you backhanded when he gave you some bullcrap one day at the dinner table after you were upset about some news event. I forget what it was, but I think it had something to do with the school violence.
Yes, this was at the spate of school violence, and I was very wound up by it, as a lot of people were. And when Jason said something, and he never should have opened his mouth, it was just a quick backhand.
So you backhanded this kid in the face because you were upset with something in the news having to school. I just think that personally that that is, it's out of control, you know.
Right. Are you done? Because I'd like to read this.
Yes, I'm done. I mean, are you listening to me?
I'm listening to you, Phil, but I've got things to do. I've got places to go and people to see, so.
Yeah, we got to get moving.
Oh, well, okay, I'm sorry. So you go right ahead, Margaret, and smack your son around and take a golf club to his personal effects. It's perfectly fine.
I don't smack my son around. I took a golf club to some garbage that he had brought.
Go ahead, read the thing.
This is terribly sad. Bonnie Franklin has died at the age of 69.
Who?
Bud, shut up.
I don't know who it is.
Who cares if you know? We're making an announcement here. Go ahead.
You're really asking for it, you know that.
I didn't know who it was.
One Day at a Time star Bonnie Franklin dies at age 69. Before Bonnie Franklin, who died Friday at the age of 69 of pancreatic cancer, and her hit Norman Lear sitcom One Day at a Time arrived on the scene, most television mothers were either this.
It's a little hard, right?
Yes.
Here, I'll do it. Would you get something to drink, Margaret? And
what do you mean by that?
I don't mean booze. Get some water or something. Oh. Before Bonnie Franklin, who died Friday at the age of 69 of pancreatic cancer, and her hit Norman Lear sitcom One Day at a Time arrived on the scene, most television mothers were either stay-at-home wives or they were working widows. But Franklin's Anne Romano was something new, a divorced mother of two raising two teenage daughters in a small urban apartment while struggling to relaunch her career and her love life. In a TV universe just beginning to take note of the real-world social changes happening beyond its screen, the sunny but sometimes hot-tempered Anne and the short, spunky redhead who played her were a breath of fresh air, if not sometimes hot. For nine CBS seasons, from 1975 to 1984, Franklin guided audiences through some of the hot-button issues of the day. Premarital sex, sexual harassment, child abandonment, and a show that mixed comedy and soap in equal measures. Boy, that was 9 years, man. That was a good long run. Franklin didn't get to sing much on One Day at a Time. A shame, because she garnered a Tony nomination for Applause, a musical adaptation of All About Eve. But she did get to provide parental guidance to two of TV's most fondly remembered teens, bad girl Julie Mackenzie Phillips and good girl Barbara Valerie Bertinelli.
That's the one that's on TV with the fat commercial.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to call it a fat commercial? It's like a Jenny Craig thing, you know. Fat commercial.
Ain't she married to Eddie Van Halen?
Not anymore.
What did I do?
I didn't say you caused them to get divorced. It's just she's not married to him anymore.
But you got divorced from him when he lost that tongue thing, right?
She didn't divorce him because he had cancer of the tongue. They just got divorced. Now, well, there's the commercial music, so we have to take a break. We'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. World-famous Phil Henry Show. We'll be right back right after these mild-mannered messages.
Ain't that the lady that was married to Judge?
Yes.
Thank God I was getting something to drink because I didn't hear any of that. If I heard what he said, I would twist his head off.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Hey, welcome back, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. I know it was a little emotional for Margaret. She was reading the story here, the Bonnie Franklin story about One Day at a Time, Bonnie Franklin dying at 69. And Pat Harrington is the name of the super, Margaret.
Pat Harrington, that's right. He was a scream. Yes, it was very emotional. Pat Harrington won a Golden Globe, am I right?
He did. He won a Golden Globe for Best Actor in a Supporting Role.
For the One Day at a Time show?
Can you tell? Bud, don't yell everything.
Yeah, Bud, what do you got to go for the One Day at a Time show?
I don't know.
Pat Harrington was one. I want to get Barvey. What is wrong with me today? I'm going to get Harvey Wireman on the line here and talk about this. Harvey, you're not really an entertainment attorney. You did know some of these people, right?
Yeah, you know, we had some good times back in the day, you know, and you were representing some of these people. I wasn't, I wasn't an entertainment lawyer, but I did do some, along with Frank, Margaret's husband, Frank Gray, we did some, we guided some people through some pretty rocky waters, but...
So who do you recall from the show?
Well, the guys, you know, there were a lot of people on this program that we think of very fondly, not only Bonnie Franklin, Phil, but... And not only Pat Harrington, but there was I loved Howard Hesseman was great. Howard Hesseman.
Howard Hesseman?
Is that what his name was? All right.
Well, are your glasses on?
Yes, my glasses are on. What's wrong?
Well, you say you knew the guy.
Yes, I knew him very well. I'm just trying to remember his name. There was Howard Hesseman. There was Rickard Masser. Rickard Masser.
Richard Major. Richard Major?
Well, I don't know. These are not the people that they were. Did they work on One Day at a Time?
Yes, Richard Major worked on One Day at a Time and Howard Hesseman, but... You said Howard Hesseman.
I said, what about the ladies? There was one named Shelley Fabares.
Shelley Fabre.
Look, and I knew these actors. Was she on the show?
Yes.
Well, the name that I remember was Shelley Fabares.
Shelley Fabares. How did you spell the first name?
S-H-E-L-L-E-Y.
That is Shelley.
S-H-E-L-L-E-Y is Shelley? That's she. S-H-E is what?
No, but you don't say...
S-H-E is what?
She.
L-L-E-Y is what?
Lee.
Shelley? Oh, you need help.
No, it's Shelley.
All right, well, you can say it's Shelley if you want to sound like you've got... If you want to sound like you have got a shunt in the side of your head to drain fluid, you go right ahead and say it that way. But I prefer to sound like a man who is out of surgery. The doctor has a 100% prognosis on my... Oh, forget it. What are you laughing at?
You, dude, I've never heard a guy take more time trying to explain how messed up somebody is than you. Like I've got a shunt in the side of my head to drain fluid.
That's exactly right.
Look, I don't know what you two jackballs are talking about, but I know that her name is Shelley Fabre, all right?
Jackball? Smile, when you say that.
Like, look, I don't blame Margaret for being frustrated. Shelley Fabre, then there was Nanette Fabre.
Was that a mother-daughter combo, or...
Was that a mother-daughter combo? No, they spell the last names differently.
Look, I know what you're thinking, Harvey. You've got a filthy pit of sewage for a brain. Okay?
Why did you say that?
Because I know what you mean when you say mother-daughter combo.
Well, it's a logical question.
What are you asking?
What am I asking?
When he said Shelley Fabre and Nanette Fabre, he says, is that a combo? Because he's thinking only one thing, bachelor party and convention.
I'm not thinking back. It's a logical question. They worked in Hollywood.
Oh, I see. So mother-daughter actresses.
Mother-father?
Mother-daughter actresses also team up for parties because they work in Hollywood?
Look, Phil, try to spare me and your audience. I'm sorry. I gotta go.
Well, Margaret, I guess you're not the only one.
That's what I've been trying to tell you.
That's what you've been trying to tell me, what?
That there's a problem with the food in this town. There's a problem with the food west of downtown. I don't know what it is, but west of downtown, everyone I know has gas. Well, what are you looking at?
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Everybody I know west of downtown has gas. All right, to wrap up the story...
I don't appreciate being called stupid. I just want to go on the record as saying that.
That's fine. I don't appreciate being treated like I'm an idiot. Everybody west of downtown has gas.
Well, I'm telling you, you just heard him let one go, didn't you? Didn't you just hear Harvey Weierman push one out?
I heard him belch, if that's what you mean.
Yes.
So, Bonnie Franklin has passed on. Like many of the topical sitcoms of the 70s, this is a very good statement here, One Day at a Time has not aged well. But what was novel then is now either familiar or forgotten. In truth, in some quarters, it's only still discussed because of the real-world troubles that caused Phillips to be written out of the show twice. Still, she thought of Franklin shaking her red bob, scrunching her eyes, pursing her lips, or shouting out, "Julie!" can still bring a smile to people who grew up with her and Bertinelli, who gave Franklin one of her last roles in a guest shot in Hot in Cleveland. She made our TV days better, and for that, she'll always be remembered. So, Bonnie Franklin.
Hey, talk about Phillips.
Mackenzie Phillips got written out of the show a couple times, I guess, because she was, you know, I think she had some problems, man. I don't know what they were.
Yeah, I think that like drugs.
Well, you don't know if they were drugs.
I think they were drugs.
And you don't know either.
I'll bet you money they were. I'll bet you anything. I think it was drugs. I think this is a young woman that had some problems. And if she's the same kid I'm thinking of, whose father was John Phillips, am I right about that?
Yes.
Now, this is a story that I'm going to tell you something right now. It makes me sick to my stomach, if you want to get right down to it.
Wait a minute. We just got done celebrating the life of Bonnie Franklin. Now you are sick to your stomach about Mackenzie Phillips?
No, if the story that I heard about her growing up with John Phillips is true... it made me want to vomit. Okay, so...
Well, I don't know.
Justin Bieber tweets, "Worst birthday party after a confrontation with club security puts an end to his dreams of having a really cool bitchin' party at the nightclub what he wanted to have it at." Justin Bieber, as Harvey might say, may want to leave the circus to Britney Spears from now on after writing excitedly about his, quote, big night ahead, end of quote. Just hours ago, the newly 19-year-old star dejectedly tweeted, "Worst birthday." Well, I hardly think so.
Well, why do you say that?
Worst birthday? I mean, how could a guy, in any event, I mean, he's a big superstar. Maybe when he turned 10 or something, somebody gave him what? Maybe they just gave him a little wooden sailboat. Isn't that worse?
Not really. If the worst one, if there's no love...
Well, maybe there wasn't any love in this one, then. Maybe that's what he's talking about. Anyway, Bieber, an eyewitness source exclusively told E, because E was hanging around like the pain in the ass that they are and couldn't get into the party, so they started trailing after anybody that was coming out, and some poor guy who was actually just there to clean up all the platters that had all the cold cuts on them, they trailed after this guy, and they found out that Bieber did indeed hold a circus-themed birthday bash at London's Cirque du Soir last night with guests including British singer and the teen's new rumored flame, Ella Paige Roberts Clark. But a couple of hours ago, the insiders say a confrontation occurred between Bieber's entourage and club security, prompting Bieber's entire party to leave. The incident went down very quickly, and the birthday boy headed straight back to his hotel afterward, weeping and sobbing with his face buried in his New York Jets baseball cap. Twitter, meanwhile, is abuzz with disappointed fans using the hashtag Bieber's hates paparazzi, and we feel bad for Justin. He didn't get the birthday party that he wanted while we sit here lonely and it's raining outside. At least he got to get his shirtless celebration on Thursday night as he stripped not only his shirt off, but his pants right on down to a very ungodly jockstrap. Bieber's rep could not immediately be reached for comment because she was passed out dead drunk in the middle.
Don't take that from my hand.
You are lying about... Well, you dirty liar.
Of course I'm kidding.
You didn't say you're kidding.
I'm just reading the story so it'll be more interesting. Okay?
Phil, don't you think Hollywood is interesting enough?
No, I don't. Anyway, Justin Bieber, it sucked. It's bad, man. It's bad. And it's getting worse all the time. Look, if you're going to have stars, if you're going to have people that we enjoy, because we like to see them in our magazines, we like to see them on our television, we like to see them in our music videos, if you insist, you nightclubs out there, on having a rep, then you better start treating some of these people better. Don't get into confrontations with their entourage unless it redounds to the benefit of both. In other words, if Bieber leaves and he's all pissed off, but really behind the scenes, he's, hey, good one, and you guys look great. I don't even name, the name of this club is what, Cirque du Soir? Now everybody thinks your club is a toilet bowl. Good job.
Yeah, you think to treat people bad.
Exactly. Am I going to go to that nightclub when I go to London? No, because I know you guys are the ones that made Justin Bieber feel all bad. And I'm not making fun of the kid. He's entitled to be a kid. He's entitled to act like a kid. He's entitled to act like a kid with a lot of money. What you people at the club do, whatever the hell need to do, is start getting your head and your ass wired together and start treating these people with deference, even though they may be vomiting in the middle of the club and dance floor.
Yay!
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a break, and we may not be back, given the first 45 minutes of this soiree tonight. No, I'm kidding. We will be back. No, maybe not. Well, no. No, we won't be back. Yes, we will. You know what?
Truth,
I don't know. I haven't decided.
Is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
We won't. We will.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. On the line is Chris Norton from the Rusty Pelican in Redondo Beach. We're going to talk with Chris in just a moment. But I want to remind you that online at philhenryshow.com, a backstage pass available, as well as a few other things like our online store. So if you want to get some Phil Hendry Show merch, which includes baseball caps, T-shirts, we have our Teds of Beverly Hills hoodie, which I'm wearing tonight here on Phil TV and HD. On the back of the Teds of Beverly Hills hoodie, you will see the words, "We want to put our meat in your mouth," which is a steakhouse talk. That's nothing more. Ted wants to be clear on that. And, of course, we have a coffee mugs, keychains, all kinds of tchotchke stuff, all kinds of cool stuff. And all of our legacy CDs are available there as well, plus the brand-new downloads we have, Best of Bobby Dooley, Best of Ted Bell. So head on over to our online store at philhenryshow.com. Chris Norton on the line. Chris, the reason why we got you on the phone, first off, I want to say good evening to you.
Good evening, Phil.
And, Chris, you're a telemarketer in Redondo Beach?
I do still do telemarketing, yeah.
And what else do you do?
I'm trying to develop my own entertainment company. It's called No One Explodes, and it's going to be on the cutting edge of adultainment, and it's going to have a very sussy, sort of what we're looking for right now is kind of a sussy edge to it.
All right. I wanted to ask you about maybe your youth. I was sitting here talking to Dan, and I was talking to my audience off the air, my Phil TV audience. My brother, when he was a young man, 15, 16, I think he might even have been younger. No, I think he was like 15. He got involved intimately with a woman in her 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember, nor was I told, much more than that. I was told this by my folks, my mom, I think. But there wasn't any, I didn't learn of any repercussions.
I didn't learn of any you know, confrontation. I did hear something along the lines that my dad confronted this woman somehow or otherwise said something to her, but I'm not exactly sure. Now, you know, you are very, very upfront and honest about your sex life. Have you or did you, when you were at that age, were you involved with a woman much older?
Well, Miss Murray, you have to sort of understand that, you know, I am very good looking, and a lot of women are very attracted to me because of the sexual energy that I do put out. So if you have the sexual energy like I done, then your sex is going to ooze out, or it's going to be out there, you know. And so I guess to answer your question, you know, yeah, my sex was very much in, you know, evidence at that age.
But the question, Chris, this is Margaret Gray, Chris.
Yes, Ms. Gray.
The question is, were you involved with a woman at that age?
Well, I think I'm kind of trying to, you know, sort of delicately talk about it. You know, I was. I mean, even when you're 15, you know, your sex is going to be evident. So the sex that you put out.
Yeah, I got that. So are you saying that's a yes or no?
No, that's a qualified yes. I mean, if your sex is so strong, as my sex was, then your sexuality and your sensuality is going to be. And I had a lot of sex. No question I had sex.
Okay, so you got involved with women at a young age. How old were you?
Well, when you say I got involved with women, I had sex. I had a strong sexuality. And, yeah, it was a feminine, very feminine woman. I mean, it was a feminine person. And
well, how old were you?
I was 15.
You were 15?
Yes, sir.
And this was a woman that your parents confronted?
My father was old-fashioned. My mother's old-fashioned, too. That's why I eventually had to wind up leaving our house, because I was trying to get Norton's Blows going, and I was also screening a lot of my adult films. I was trying to catalog my adult films, and my parents wouldn't let me catalog them in the living room. I was trying to watch them there, and so I decided I was just going to leave. But my relationship with this person.
Well, was she married? Was she single?
When you say she, what do you mean?
We're talking about the woman that you said you had sex with.
I had sex with a feminine. You know, it doesn't make any difference whether it's a guy or a woman. You know, it just shows the sex that I had. You see? And
wait a minute. Are you saying it was a guy?
Are you saying that was a man?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first one of them was a man, yeah. When I was, there were a lot of men involved.
But what are you talking about? That's not no lady.
It doesn't make any difference, man. It doesn't make any difference. You guys are way behind the ball on this one, man. It's just you're talking about, Mr. Henry is asking me about my sex. Is that right, Mr. Henry?
I was asking you, had you had relations with a woman when you were an underage, when you were a minor? And you said to me you had relations with it sounded to me like he said woman.
Well, you said a feminine person.
Yeah, he was very feminine.
How many...
Dude, you're telling me you had sex with a guy? How many guys?
Hey, man, why don't you shut up? You know, I'm not even talking to you.
All right, watch it.
I don't need to hit this guy. You know, hey, man, I'm talking about, Mr. Henry asked me about my sex, okay?
Yeah, I know about your sex. You're talking about it. Mr. Henry asked about whether you had sex with a lady, and you said a guy.
No, Mr. Henry's asked me about my sex, and I said I had sexuality and sensuality. And I said, yeah, I had sex. And then he says, well, who? And I said, well, I had sex with the femininity. You know?
You said you had sex with somebody. These were men that you had sex with.
Yeah, but it doesn't. What I'm trying to say is it don't matter.
Yeah, it matters. It matters a lot. If you're going to say that you had sex with a lady, but you didn't.
Are you homosexual?
No, man, I'm not a homosexual. That's a misunderstanding a lot of people have. No, I'm not a homosexual. No, I'm not a homosexual. That's a misunderstanding. See, when you're having sex... And,
why is that a misunderstanding? All right, so when you were underage, you had sex with guys?
I had a lot of sex with women. I had a lot of sex with women, okay? But yeah, I had sex with a few guys. And you're talking about when I was 15?
Yes, so when you were 15, you had sex with men.
Yes, but the, then after that, I decided to switch over. And
yeah, right. Yeah, you probably still have sex with guys.
You know what, man? I would invite you to come over to my crib anytime you want, Dickmans. And you can bring your camera and you can videotape all that goes down. And I'll tell you right now, I assess probably about, you know, 7-8 times a day. It's hard to explain this, Mr. Henry.
Well, I wanted to find out what your parents did, how they reacted, what did they say, how did they confront this person? Did anybody confront this adult man you were having sex with?
He was an adult. I thought you were asking me, did I have sex? Right?
I asked you if you had sex with a woman older than you.
I said I had sex with a feminine guy older than me.
How old was he?
16. See what happened?
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
You need a producer. You really do need a producer because I don't think that...
You're probably right.
That's talking about having sex with a guy.
I had... Yeah, when I was 15, he was 6. It was Lance Germain.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
That is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Welcome here a Friday night, kind of a squirrely night, but we're very, very happy to be with you nonetheless. Very busy here over this past week. And for those of you enjoying us on Phil TV and HD at philhenryshow.com, thank you for joining us there. And if you are not, get a backstage pass, philhenryshow.com. It is the internationally recognized worldwide galactic headquarters of the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and you must have a backstage pass in order to enjoy this program at its fullest, and we thank you for that. With me is Margaret Gray, Bud Dickman, Robert Leonard. Later on, we'll have a couple of more people joining us. Jay Santos coming up this hour on matters of security and how safe is your home and other questions that Jay is probably barely qualified to talk about, and yet we still have him on to talk about those things, Margaret.
Yes, you do. And also this hour, we're going to be talking about Paul Newman, the late actor. Paul Newman, one of the all-time greatest actors that the American stage and the American film business, I think, has put out there. Paul Newman passed on, as you know, in 2008. But if Paul Newman were still alive, we're going to be talking a little bit about what he'd be doing right now.
All right. Well, let's start off here with a story out of NASCAR. Mark Martin... he may be getting better with age. Mark Martin's been around a long time. If you've followed NASCAR, if you followed auto racing, you know the name Mark Martin. He's 54 years of age, and he is the now second oldest driver to earn a NASCAR pole, with his second straight pole position at Phoenix. Coming off a third-place finish at the Daytona 500, Martin became the second oldest driver to win a sprint car pole on Friday by earning the top spot at Phoenix's International Raceway for the second straight year. A lot of people describe Mark by saying, "Mark's on it," Martin's crew chief Rodney Childers said. Well, for 2013, Mark's on it squared. What are you looking at?
I don't like Mark's on it.
Yeah, it is. It sounds like he's spotting on it.
Only if you're looking for it.
You know, Phil, this is what you always say.
No, you don't have to be looking for it.
I know. When you say the man is squatting on it, what do you... See what he said? Mark is on it. He's squatting on it.
He didn't say squatting on it. He said Mark is on it squared.
Oh, my mistake.
So, in other words, what you got out of that, you guys, is why are you talking about this, Phil? Mark's on it, and you thought that was squat?
It looked like squat from here, yes.
Mark's on it squared.
All right. Okay, good enough.
So what did you think it said? Mark's on it squat?
We thought it said Mark is squatting on it. And there was an obvious... There's an obvious connection you're going to make. Oh, don't get like that, Phil.
Give me a break, will you? Mark's squatting on it. So what if the guy said Mark's squatting on it? Why do you got to go to sex?
Not going to sex could be
It could be number...
It could be number two.
Boy, you've got a pair just coming right out and saying that, though.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. This is very childish, okay? And you're going to talk about Paul Newman in relation to...
No, I am not. Don't you dare make it seem as if I'm going to disrespect the great name of Paul Newman. I am not going to do that. That question that I have about Paul Newman, do you want me to ask it now?
No, I do not. No, I'd like to finish this, if you don't mind. So no more interruptions. And if you think I'm saying something that is improper, impolite, impolitic, as the word may or may not go, you may bring it up to me at that at a later date. Martin went around PIR's Mile Oval, that's Phoenix International Raceway's Mile Oval, with a speed of 138.74 miles per hour, his 56th pole, passing Bill Elliott. Now what?
Well, what do they mean by pole?
Will you come on?
These are normal, logical questions that are going to be asked.
It is a pole position, meaning you have the optimum position on the racetrack, which means, to wit, you are on the inside... front row. That's the shortest course around the track, to be on the very inside front row. I believe I'm correct in stating that. That right, Robert?
That makes sense to me, yeah.
So if you have the pole position in automobile racing and oval track racing, you are in the front row and you are the closest to the infield. So you have the shortest distance around the track than anyone else. Thank you. Mr. Martin turned 54 in January, leaving him just a few months behind Harry Gant, who was 54 years and 7 months when he won his last pole at Bristol in 1994.
All right, Harry Gant, 1960s. He'd be in his 70s now.
Yes, is he still racing?
No, I don't think Harry Gant is still racing. Martin will be joined on the front row by Casey Kahn for Sunday's 312-mile race with Daytona 500 winner Jimmy Johnson and Kyle Busch in the second row. I said it last week, and I had some people make some snide remarks about it, but at this stage of the game, it's pretty amazing I get to drive something like this. What snide remarks were they making?
I don't know, probably about how old he is.
Really? God, man, what kind of... this world of ours, people are always looking to put you down for the easiest slam. Why don't they just... if you want to knock the guy, knock him for being... if he's a bad driver, he's a bad driver. If you want to knock the guy, knock him for being a crap can driver. Or whatever. What's the point of knocking a guy for his age, you know?
Well, I think people think that because they're... Oh, well, look at you. You're getting a little sensitive, aren't you?
Yeah, I think you need a Mr. Henry not get so sensitive about it.
Oh, well, okay.
I mean, really, man.
I'm not getting sensitive about that. I'm just saying, if you want to knock somebody for something... Look, I'm 60 years old. I'm 60 years old. There are guys half my age, they're not... Well, I better not say it.
Yeah, don't say it.
That aren't getting as much ass.
I'm going to kick... I said don't say it.
Well, I give it to you there, man. When it comes to women, it don't matter how old you are. You'll...
Don't talk about it.
Well, Phil, then what...
Just never mind. Martin started on the pole at PIR last year before finishing ninth, and he won the pole in 2009. He had a solid opening to the 2013 season, starting 14th at Daytona last Sunday and working his way to the front to make a big move on the final lap to finish behind John Dale Earnhardt. There you go. All right, what was your question, Margaret?
Well, that was wonderful. My question is this. If Paul Newman were alive, he'd be 87 years of age, somewhere in that neighborhood. You know that Paul Newman was a race car driver.
Yes, he was.
Do you think he'd still be driving today?
No, I don't.
Why?
Because he's 87, if he were still alive.
Yeah.
What's that got to do with it?
The age? Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. It was Paul Newman. I'm not talking... Let's back up and start all over again. Paul Newman. You know who he is. He was one of the greatest actors we've ever had. He was one of the most generous of men. He was a race car driver. He was a race car owner. He benefited so many areas of American life. Are you trying to tell me he wouldn't at least still be driving?
He'd be driving? You mean like a car?
No, a race car, you blithering...
Do I think he'd still be racing?
Why is that something that causes you to go... Why did you do that?
Well, because you're talking about Paul Newman, 87 years old.
Do I think Paul Newman would still be racing? The answer is no, I don't. He wasn't racing when he died.
Well, I hope not. God,
Yeah, that's a good one. V's race when he died, there would have been, he would have got air.
Yeah, he would have got air. The point that I'm trying to make here is there is a point where you have to hang it up, you know? There is a point where you have to just say thank you very much and good night, and I don't think that Paul Newman would be still racing. I saw Paul Newman race. I saw him race at Riverside, okay?
Yes.
And I saw him racing in the 80s when he was approaching 60, and he was in a sports car. This was the sports car series, so he was out there. There were, like, Porsches out there. There were Datsuns. There were, I don't know.
They were racing a Porsche against a Datsun. You're kidding, right?
No, but I mean, these were not just regular Datsuns. I mean, these things were fitted out for racing. In fact, Paul Newman's team was a Datsun team. And he had other guys on his team, and he raced, and he was very formidable, and he was a guy that placed, and he was a guy that did very, very well. He wasn't a champion driver. And it could be because he started racing at a later age than most men do. I don't think he started racing until he was in his 40s. But he did well for his age. Now, you're asking me, would he still be racing at 87? You got to be nuts.
I don't like being called nuts, Phil.
Well, I'm calling you nuts right now if you are still on about Paul Newman racing if he were still alive at 87.
I think there's a chance, and I think you need to give people a chance instead of writing them off like garbage. If you want to treat a man like he's garbage, go ahead. If you want to take a man and throw his life into a garbage can, then you do that, Mr. Henry. I don't do that. You do that. I don't do that. That's something you do. That's something on your conscience. I don't. Paul Newman, well...
What?
Paul Newman can get in...
What?
Paul Newman can get in my cockpit any time, and I don't mean that sexually, and that's why I was reluctant to say anything.
Oh, come on, baby.
Yeah, Paul Newman can get... We'll be right back, folks. He's dead. Can he get into it now?
Obviously not now.
Why not? Even though he's dead.
I think there are laws against the...
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show. So, because
Drew,
there's a law...
He's our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Oh, God.
You brought it up, you scum.
Jay Santos, Citizens Auxiliary Police. Jay, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to call in and check in very briefly with you on the discussion you were having. You had asked about Paul Newman, and I'd had a discussion earlier today with, I think it was Bud Dickman, about Steve McQueen.
Steve, what did you ask him, Bud?
I want to know if Paul Newman did all his stunts in A Great Escape.
He didn't do all of his stunts.
Wait. Paul Newman was not in The Great Escape.
All right, Paul Newman was not in The Great Escape, so I'd have to go back and
Well, that's who I was asking about.
Well, if you asked if Paul Newman did all of his own stunts in The Great Escape, Paul Newman wasn't in The Great Escape. Paul Newman was... Steve McQueen was in The Great Escape.
All right, that's where I went wrong. Steve McQueen, I got to go back now.
Did you do research on Paul Newman in The Great Escape?
Yes.
Well, he wasn't in that movie.
I have him as a character on a motorcycle. That's all right?
I thought it was.
No. And that would have been something fairly evident. If you just look at IMDb.com.
Well, Phil, I don't go by IMDb.com. I don't go by that. I go by the film itself because I don't want to trust the Internet because I don't know the kind of information you're getting on the Internet. I understand a lot of it's very, very sound, but I would much rather just go with evidence of my eye. You know what I mean by evidence of my eye?
No, I don't know what you mean.
By watching the film. So I watched and I looked at the credits.
Did it say Paul Newman was in the movie?
No, it did not. No. And that's why I went back over to IMDb.
Did that say that Paul Newman was in the movie?
No, sir.
Then how can you do research on Paul Newman being in The Great Escape?
I'm going by what Mr. Dickman told me.
Yeah. Paul Newman was not in a... If he wasn't in A Great Escape, then I got those two guys backwards. Because I know he was in the Flowering Inferno.
Yeah. When we looked up Flowering Inferno,
And that's not Flowering Inferno. It's called Towering Inferno.
Well, boy, I'll tell you, either somebody's going to look like a real horse's hind end here. It's going to be you or Dickman or me. I found Flowering Inferno. It's a Japanese film, right?
No, it's not a Japanese film.
Well, what did you have me looking up, bud?
I told you to...
Whoa. Hold on there, Caballero. Watch it, Sunshine. Don't go, you know, you were asking me for a favor, and I'm trying to give you that favor.
I told you to look up Paul Newman, to find out he'd done his own stump in the Flowering Inferno.
In the Flowering Inferno? I thought you were talking about The Great Escape.
I mean The Great Escape. I'm sorry.
All right. I looked up Flowering Inferno. It's a Japanese film. Am I right? Am I getting warm?
No, man. You're not getting warm. You're cold as ice, Jack. Cold, man.
Well, I don't understand.
Flowering Inferno, I've never heard of. If it's a Japanese movie, it probably has something to do with a Zen garden and some cat wearing one of those bathrobes and walking around and, you know, on rice paper. I don't know what that's about. I've never heard of it. Okay?
Well, then what does Dickman talk about?
I don't know what Dickman's talking. What are you talking about?
The movie with Paul Newman in it.
If you're talking about Towering Inferno, Newman and McQueen were in the movie together.
Maybe that's where we you know, do we bowl up like that?
See, this is where I think they went wrong. You have Paul Newman and you have Steve McQueen and you have them in a film together, correct?
I've got flowering, because Phil's going to get upset.
Do you got Paul Newman in a movie called Flowering Inferno?
No.
Then why are you guys even worried about that, man? If you ain't got Newman in The Great Escape, you don't have him in Flowering Inferno. You do have him in Towering Inferno, don't you?
I've got to look that one up.
Well, how did you know that Paul Newman was in anything approaching a film named Inferno? Because he, as Phil said, he was in Towering Inferno.
I thought it was Flowering Inferno. That's, you know, that's my mistake.
You know, Jay, I got to tell you something, man.
Oh, Phil, please.
No, I got to tell you, you know, you're out there with your citizens auxiliary police and all of this bull crap. You know, you can't even get this right.
You know, Phil, I think that's pretty cool to say about bull crap.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It is. It's bull crap. You can't even get this right. You can't find out what movie the guy was in. You got Flowering Inferno. You got Paul Newman on a motorcycle in Great Escape. He wasn't in Great Escape.
Well, one of the problems you have with Paul Newman and Steve McQueen is, number one, they're both very similar in age. They look very much alike.
No, they don't.
No, they do not look very much alike.
Well, I beg to differ on that one. That's just going to have to go. That's just going to have to be a matter of opinion. I think the two of them could be twins.
Yeah, I think they're pretty similar.
No, they're not, man.
They're Paul Newman and Steve McQueen are not similar at all. Not at all. They look very different.
Well, so what do you want me to find out?
Oh, forget it, man, okay? Just forget it. Never mind.
Don't be a baby about it.
Phil, don't be a baby. What do you want?
I'm the baby? I asked a very simple question. I asked how he got Newman in The Great Escape. I wasn't the guy that asked for this information in the first place. Dickman did. What did you ask?
I wanted to know if Newman did his own stunts in The Flowering Inferno.
No, you didn't ask about The Flowering Inferno.
Well, then why are you asking him?
Because Dickman's the one. What did he ask you, Jay?
Bud? Yeah. What did you ask me, Bud?
About Flowering Inferno.
Yeah, he asked me if Steve McQueen and Paul Newman did their motorcycle stunt in The Flowering Inferno.
Well, I'm telling you that that's not what he asked. He asked you if Paul Newman did his own stunts in The Great Escape.
That's it, The Great Escape, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right, The Great Escape.
And let's just take Flowering Inferno and take that and throw it in the garbage, because even if there is a movie called Flowering Inferno, it ain't got nothing to do with Paul Newman or Steve McQueen. Towering Inferno. Towering Inferno.
So you're saying that Towering Inferno had Paul Newman in it?
Yes! Towering Inferno had Paul Newman and Steve McQueen. Now, McQueen was in Great Escape. McQueen did all the motorcycle riding in Great Escape. McQueen was also in Towering Inferno. Paul Newman was also in Towering Inferno. And Paul Newman in Towering Inferno played an architect. Steve McQueen played a fireman. And they actually had a great many scenes together. And that's where that's at.
And what about the motorcycle?
That's Paul Newman. No. That's Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen.
All right. Do you know if he did his own stunts?
Steve McQueen did his own riding. I do not believe, and I know that, Dan, you may have a difference of opinion with me on this. I do not believe that Steve McQueen did the stunts. I believe that Steve McQueen did do his own riding. He did do a great many of those scenes on that motorcycle. But in terms of some of the stunts, I do not believe so.
All right. Bud.
what? If you want to, give me a call back here in just a couple of seconds, and we'll talk about that. You want to do that?
Yeah, okay, Jay. Hold, get, you just sit tight, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Jay Santos, I think a lot of this the problem here, bud, is that you just don't know.
Hold on. Hello? Yeah? Yeah. Yeah.
Get off the phone.
I gotta go. Okay, thanks. What?
I'm on the air, you know? We're on the air.
Sorry, that was Jay.
What did he say?
Jay said that Steve McQueen did his own stunts in Great Inferno. Or no.
I'm gonna kill you, man.
What did I do?
I'm gonna kill you, man. Steve McQueen and Jay just told you that, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, just after he heard it from me. So he hangs up and calls you back and tells you that Steve McQueen did his own stunts in the Great Inferno?
In a towering escape. In great escape. What are you looking at?
Man, don't you understand what's going down here? Don't even know what time it is out there? You sound like a solid gold jackball, man. First of all, the man got all this information from Mr. Henry. Now he calls you back, tells you the same information got from Mr. Henry. You call up and you say, hey, Mr. Henry, I got the information for you. And you can't even get the name of the movie right? You called it The Great Inferno? Called it The Tower and Escape? Man, you all messed up. You're all kinds of stupid.
That, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, I done the best I could.
That's not the best you can do, bud. That's the best that an ant can do. That's the best that someone who is in remedial therapy can do. That's the best that a four-year-old can do. Is that your best?
Yeah.
All right.
We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Henry Show. McQueen did his own stunts. Great escape.
Hold on. Jay Sanders here, Citizens Auxiliary Police. Are you saying that it was called the Great Inferno or the...
Phil Henry. The world famous Phil Henry Show.
I didn't say anything of the sort. Welcome back. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, I think you did, Phil. I'm no one to talk off the air. But I think you did.
All right, I'll say it because I know you're going to say it. I said that Joe Flacco strikes me as a jock.
I was not going to say a word.
Yes, you were. Yes, you were. Okay.
No, I wasn't.
All right, fine. But I knew that you would. I knew if I didn't say it, you would have said it. Joe Flacco strikes me as a jock. I don't know the man. Strikes me that way. It's a bad thing to say because he may very well be completely. And by jock, what do I mean? A guy that's sort of an... Not anti-intellectual, but a non-intellectual. In other words, somebody that plays football and then sits and probably watches, One Day at a Time reruns for all, Saved by the Bell reruns, you know, for all I know.
So in other words, you're saying that he's a bit of a gibbering...
I didn't say gibbering.
Well, if you say a guy's a jock and he's not playing football, then when he's not playing football, the word gibbering's in there somewhere.
Yeah, you got to figure gibbering's in there somewhere.
No, you don't have to figure gibbering's in there somewhere. I didn't say gibbering. That bespeaks a guy that is almost a moron, and I didn't say that. I simply said he strikes me as a jock, which means, in my opinion, the first thing in your life is the sport. The second thing in your life is eating Fruity Pebbles out of the box while you're reading a comic book, okay?
And you don't call that a gibbering fool?
No, I don't call that a gibbering fool. I just call that a guy that's, you know... Maybe a guy that's got his priorities straight. Getting back to racing, though, and then we're going to move up. Well, actually, we are talking about Joe Flacco, so let's stay here with Joe Flacco. The Ravens have agreed to a new contract with quarterback Joe Flacco, Fox.com has learned. This is from Jay Glazer. Reportedly, the deal would make the Super Bowl MVP the highest-paid player in NFL history. The Associated Press, quoting a source close to the negotiations, reported that if the deal is finalized, Flacco would receive an excess of $120 million over 6 years, he would earn more than the $20 million average salary Drew Brees receives with the New Orleans Saints.
Who are these? Who is Drew Brees?
He won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he won a Super Bowl.
So if you win the Super Bowl, you're automatically the winner of the highest salary sweepstakes, is that it?
I think so. I think that's what the name of the game is.
Yeah, what do you think it's all about? About to win a Super Bowl.
Well, how many Super Bowls has Drew Brees won?
One.
And he gets $20 million a year.
Yes, he gets $20 million. Let me ask you a question. Why is it sports is the only place that I know of, the only profession that I know of, that people are constantly questioning why these guys make the money that they make? Why is that? Why is that? I don't hear anybody questioning why it is that, say, Brad Pitt commands the money that he commands per movie. I don't hear anything about that.
Well, you're looking at, these are football teams, Phil, that people expect to win.
Wait a minute. Brad Pitt, just to pull a name out of a hat, I would not say that guy comes out with a winner every time he does a movie. Every time I put my money down to go see Brad Pitt and I walk out of there and maybe it was a lousy movie, maybe I didn't like it that much, I'm not walking out of the car going, God, I can't believe the guy gets $20 million. I don't feel ripped off. I mean, I feel ripped off by the movie in general, but I ain't looking at Brad Pitt.
Well, what do you mean every time he makes a bad movie?
Are you kidding? Brad Pitt's made some stinkers.
Like what?
Meet Joe Black. Let's start with that. And then go on down the line from there.
Meet Joe Black, that blue. Then another one he did blue, Seven Monkeys.
Seven Monkeys was good. I mean, at least people like that.
Oh, people like, did you see it?
I did see Seven Monkeys. I did like it. I didn't think the Brad, I did Brad Pitt in that movie was doing a kind of his impression of Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. But other than that, I thought it was a pretty, pretty cool movie. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, the guy, what was that other piece of garbage he did with Anthony Hopkins? What was the name of that?
Oh, that's right. A River Runs Up It or Rins...
Yeah, The River Run Up It. It's not The River Runs Up It. I think it was The River Runs Through It, something like that. That stunk.
What are you talking about? A lot of people... My mom liked it.
That's great. I'm glad your mom liked it. I'm just telling you. I'm just speaking for myself now, okay? I'm not saying that... I'm just saying for Phil Hendry, I could have walked out of that movie and I would have said, Brad Pitt's making how much money for that garbage? And I could have said, boy, do I feel ripped off. I didn't. What I did say was, that movie stunk, let's go get ice cream. Bang, that's it. You know, only in sports do people come walking out of there saying, oh my God, I can't believe it.
Yeah, but everybody, people rock the sport different.
I understand that. I understand that people are in love with their teams, and if and how the team goes, so goes the mental health of people. Seriously, if a team wins, people are feeling great. If the team loses, some guy's ready to jump off a bridge. I understand. But to be honest with you, if a team loses and a guy jumps off a bridge, am I going to go and arrest Joe Flacco?
Well, some people think you should.
Is that right? Only idiots would say that. Only some guy that's spending way too much time watching TV and following the Baltimore Ravens is going to think that. But in any event, he's making more money than any other quarterback in the history of man on this planet. Flacco will reportedly sign on Monday. He was set to become an unrestricted free agent on March the 12th. What's the date today?
It's like the 5th or something like that, or no, it's like the, it's either the 5th or it's February the 2022, or
it's March 1st.
What?
It's either the 5th or February 22. It's the 1st. So you love how they really walk it right on up to the line, don't they?
Well, it's part of the negotiating ploy.
Yeah. Like the Ravens thought that they were going to come out of this with anything less than just, having a couple of top dollar. Anyway, Flacco led the Ravens to a victory over the 49ers in Super Bowl 47. And
let me see.
Grab it out of my hand.
Let me see. 40, 1, 2, 3, 4. What is it?
XLV11.
XLV11. What is that?
It's the Roman numeral. Give me that, will you?
Well, I don't know.
I do. I happen to be able to read Roman numeral.
Let me see. Is this your only copy?
Give me that, will you? My only copy. It is Super Bowl 47. I told you. XLV1. Super Bowl 47. My only copy. No, you may not. Was named the game's MVP, drafted in the first round back in 2008. Flacco became the team's starting quarterback from day one. He's thrown 102 touchdown passes in 80 career games in Baltimore.
His teams have won the AFC North twice during his tenure, and he's led Baltimore to 3 appearances in the NFC Championship game. There you go. And that's the thing about Flacco. He had to win, and he did. You got to admire that. You got to admire a guy who's got a gun pointed to his head. I'm serious. He's got a gun pointed to his head.
Well, what do you mean a gun pointed to his head?
Because if Joe Flacco had not won this Super Bowl, it would have been downhill from there. I'm telling you right now, it would have been downhill. I think the Ravens would have been looking for a quarterback as soon as the offseason began.
Really?
Yes, really. Really. Because Flacco had made just enough of a noise and just enough of a pain of himself in terms of his public statements. He was saying, I want to be treated like an elite quarterback. I want to be paid like an elite quarterback. And people were saying to him, before you can be paid like an elite quarterback and treated like one, you got to win a Super Bowl. And he was saying, well, you know, there's a lot of guys that have done worse than me. And he was making all of those kinds of statements. And I'm telling you, had he not won this Super Bowl, I got money that says Baltimore would have started looking for a new quarterback. And then that would have meant, folks, Tim Tebow on the horizon.
Get out of here, Tim Tebow.
I'm one of those. Yeah, no, I mean, there's plenty of guys. Sanchez. Mark Sanchez would have been up for grabs. There's all kind of, you know, this guy in San Francisco. What's his name?
Alex Smith.
Alex Smith? Flacco would have been flacked, if you'll pardon the expression.
Oh, my God. What a...
Take it easy, will you? I didn't say it. I said flacked.
Well, but everyone, use your imagination, folks. You know what Phil was going for there.
Well, that's it. Point it out to people. Make it even worse.
I'm not. I'm just trying not to insult their intelligence. Phil said F. Yep.
Do you mind? Flacco and his agent, Joe Linta.
How about that for a name, Linta? Yeah, I'll bet his name is Linta. Thought he had to get him right out of the lint basket.
Maybe they got him out of the Linta basket.
We all done now?
No.
Are we all done?
Yeah.
Flacco and his agent... Wow, Joe Linta out of the Linta basket. Flacco and his agent, Joe Linta, had reportedly been seeking a lucrative contract, but were still willing to make a deal that would allow the Ravens to keep other important pieces and stay under the salary cap. Joe's not that kind of guy, Linta said. Yeah, sure. Joe absolutely wants to work with the Ravens to ensure that they're not impacted cap-wise. Joe doesn't want to see anybody get cut as a result of this deal. But I do notice that Joe's making more money now than any other quarterback in the NFL, so it was... And I'm not saying that he would either, but... You know, first things first there, Mr. Agent. If I were you, you did the right thing, Joe. That's what I'm trying to say, okay? You're making the right public statement, but you did the right thing. He's making more money than Breeze, and that's as he should be. It was assumed that if a deal wasn't reached, the Ravens would have used their franchise tag on the quarterback by the March 4th deadline. All right, there you go. There is the sports news from Joe Flacco Land here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, our website, philhenryshow.com. I'm looking at the time there. Is it time to break? I think it is time to break. We'll be right back. We got a Lindsay... Huh? We can break? We got a Lindsay Lohan story coming up. We also have Art Griego on a 10-part Bible series. Art Griego from Santa Monica Airport will be weighing in with us when we come back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Well, I'm not a Christian, but I...
You're listening to a world-famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We have on the line with us Art Griego from Santa Monica Airport. And we're going to be talking with Art here about a 10-part series that is... you're at the airport right now, Art, right?
Yeah, Phil.
Okay, because we have what sounds like a kind of a dirty line there.
We're at Santa Monica. We're here. One of the hangar areas just had dinner.
Okay. Art is talking with us here about a 10-part series that is going to debut on the History Channel on Sunday night called The Bible. And the reason why we're having you on, Art, is because you have been a longtime proponent, I suppose, the best way to say it, of the agnostic point of view. You don't call yourself an atheist.
No, I don't I consider myself, from that standpoint, to be an atheist. I consider myself to be an individual that is seeking, and that's why I wanted to talk about this program.
Have you seen this?
I've seen some advanced copies. I've seen some advanced sections. I should say it's a 10-part program.
Why have you gotten interested in... you're a long-time professional pilot. We've talked to you about aviation issues. And now here we are talking about religion.
Well, it is true. And I think there's a lot of people who might say, well, it sort of stands to reason if you spend most of your life, as I have, in a profession that can be extremely dangerous. Sooner or later, I suppose you're going to be looking for a higher power in this world to guide you the rest of the way. And it's always been my interest to finally investigate Christianity and some of these other Western belief systems.
So you would not call yourself someone familiar with Christianity. What was the religious training, if any, in your home as you were growing up?
Phil, my mother was a labor organizer, as was my father. Both of them were decidedly atheists. Doesn't mean there wasn't love in our home. There was a great deal of love, but both of them were on the organizing side of the labor union movement in the 1950s, and both of them also embraced Marxist-Leninist philosophies.
So would you call it, would you say your parents were communists?
I would say so. They both belonged to the Communist Labor Party and were very active. I would buy, and my sister, my older sister, were both of us very, by comparison, rather conservative. I went out to college, and eventually I became a Republican, voting Republican. My sister, I think, is a Democrat, but both of us far more conservative people.
Are your parents still alive?
No, my father died in 1990, and my mother died in 1995.
Art Griego's with us here. So now, this is very interesting. So now you go from two parents that were communists and labor organizers, and were they intellectual people? Were they...
To a degree. I think both of them were working class people. My father was an electrical worker. My mother was in food service and in the garment district for a while. But I would say that they were intellectual to a point, but nothing like... I don't think they were educated people to the extent that we're talking about.
Okay, so because it's interesting, we're going from your background, two working class people. It sounds like it to me, Art. A good family. They were good parents.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My father and mother were very important to me growing up.
Okay, and then so you had that, and they were atheists, and now here you are at this point in your life looking for a religious. Looking for some religious direction, huh?
I would say that I'll always be looking. I try to keep an open mind.
What did you think of the series, The Bible, that is going to be debuting on Sunday on the History Channel?
Well, I will tell you that it does not do Christianity. I don't think it puts a very good face on the Christian faith. I don't think it's anything that I am going to or that I'm going to want to remember if I've ever am interested in becoming a Christian. I don't think I'm going to want to watch this film.
Why is that?
A couple of reasons. Number one, I don't know if people are familiar with this or not. I know that they talk about Jesus Christ dying for people's sins. I had no idea that the man was nailed to wood and hoisted up. I mean, that's the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life, and I had to turn it off at that point. The other part of it that was almost too much for me was at the beginning when the baby, Baby Watkins.
What do you mean the baby is played by?
I thought there was a. In any event, they had an actor playing the baby, and the. The circumstances of the child's birth in a stable. Now, I don't know if you've ever worked in a stable or on a farm. I have, Phil, and a stable where animals live is about as unhygienic as it gets. It is about as foul-smelling as it gets. It's very dangerous in terms of these animals. Should they get agitated? Should they go on a stampede or any other thing that might create and so there was that tension, that this baby is being born in a stable, and I was fearing, because they had a professional actor, that you're going to lose, if something goes wrong in that scene, you're going to lose an actor. That bothered me, and again, coming from the labor background that I do come from. And then, of course, the crucifixion.
I'm having a little difficult time when you talk about the manger scene, you're worried that that was a dangerous situation to put professional actors.
The baby.
The baby. The baby in that scene. Did you see the baby?
No, I did not. I'm only familiar with one actor who does or has played babies in other films, and that's Baby Watkins. That's David Baby. But they call him David Baby Watkins, Baby Watkins.
Okay, are you afraid that Baby Watkins was there?
I have to imagine. I mean, he pretty much is the one that plays all... If you've got a role that requires a baby, Dave Baby Watkins is the man, you know. And to put an actor like that in a situation where you're going to have the possibility of injury, that was number one. But then looking at the crucifixion, I had no idea that that's what they did to the guy. So I had to turn it off.
You knew that Jesus Christ in the teachings of Christianity, that Jesus Christ was executed by the Romans.
Yes, I knew that.
Okay, and by design, according to Christian teachings, because it was his will, it was God's will, Jesus and God the Father and the Holy Spirit being one and the same, it was his decision and will to sacrifice his life for mankind so that man would have a new start, a new covenant, if you will, a new agreement with God. You knew that.
I knew on some level that was the situation that God would die and God would give his son. I didn't have any idea that he was tortured to death. I couldn't watch it. I had to turn it off. I was sick for the next 24 hours at the thought of it. And then, of course, you know, you can call it what you want. I put in, about a half a dozen calls to the major agencies to find out if Dave Baby Watkins had been in this film.
This guy, Dave Baby Watkins, are you telling me this is a real guy?
Yes, it's a real guy. It's the infant.
An infant? Now, why do they have to have a professional actor for an infant?
Are you kidding? I thought it's a TV show. You know, you hire actors.
But why do you got to hire an actor for an infant that's not going to say anything?
The baby does say things. The baby is not saying English words, but the baby is speaking. And when you have a speaking part, you hire an actor. If you don't have a speaking part, you can use an extra.
What speaking part? Are you talking about the way the baby just goo-goo and gaga?
Yes, sir. Because technically that is an articulation. I don't want to get bogged down with Dave Baby Watkins. I mean, his problems are his problems, and that's between him and his agent. And how they wanted him to work in this film is between him, the producers, and his agent. I'm talking about the fact that at that age, even though he's a professional actor, he could have been killed working with those animals, and then the fact that there were these torture scenes.
All right, we'll be right back with Art Griego, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Yes, we are at the world famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch on this show. People say, well, what does that mean? Here, I'll give you some truth right now.
Well, this is very controversial, though.
I'm going to give you some of the truth is our bitch truth on this show. If you got a woman in your life whose father was a no-good slob, a bum, and you're a really great guy, you know what I mean by great guy. I mean, you got a job. You're not mooching off of her. You don't smack her around. You treat her good. You haven't got a prayer.
That is so much horse dung.
Just listen to me, okay? Because this is absolutely the truth. This is the absolute rock-solid truth of life when it comes to relationships, women, and the whole daddy thing. If you guys are always wondering, who are these chicks? Because you see them all the time. These chicks that stay with these slobs. These drug-abusing, alcoholic, abusive slobs. And then there are the guys out there, like myself and others, you guys know who you are, where we hold down a job, we make a pretty good penny, We don't get any particular delight in smacking a woman around. We don't do that. We, you know, generally are faithful, and we present a fairly decent prospect for, you know, not just security, but also actual real love, right? And yet there she is going back to this piece of garbage that she, you know, that smacked her around. And you're sitting going, what the hell is wrong? Do yourself a big favor, man. You know what you got going on. Get the hell away from her and go and find somebody that's worthy, okay? Don't waste your time.
What, are you talking about that lady's going to want to be beaten up?
That's what you're saying. You're saying women are basically masochistic.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that there's some women that... that if all they know, look at the reason why I'm bringing this up, you guys, I'm not right out of the blue. Here it is. Here's the headline. Rihanna says her relationship with Chris Brown is unbreakable. Now, I don't know Rihanna if I was to step over her in the street or Chris Brown. I don't know either one of these guys. I know that they're both, I know Chris Brown. I've heard his music and I don't like it, but that's neither here nor there. Rihanna has moved on from her turbulent past as she claims that she's happy to get back together with the Turn Up the Music singer Chris Brown, acknowledging their relationship in an exclusive interview for LUK. The Barbadian singer says that their relationship is now more grown up. She said grown up. Now that we're adults, we can do this right. We got a fresh start and we're thankful for that, she says. She's 25. She's a 25-year-old singer. She sounds confident that she describes the strongest bond between them. Right now, that's just what we want, a great friendship that's unbreakable. Now that we're grown up. When asked why she decided to reunite with him, Rihanna admits she has thought a lot about it. She, before finally coming up with that decision, I've my own reasons, very, very private reasons, very personal. Yeah, because you were around that, Rihanna. Growing up, you were around guys that smacked women around and threw them out of cars. I don't know. I don't care. That's what you know. That's what you think love is. And that's the way it's going to be for you. And you know what you're doing all the way to the grave. I don't know.
That's a horrible thing to say about a young woman. Don't you think she knows and has the right to make her own decision?
She has every right in the world to make her own decisions. But I'm speaking more to the guys now. I'm not going to try to talk her out of it. And you know, if there's a man out there, if you think you're going to talk a woman out of this, forget it. They ain't never going to happen, man. You aren't going to go up to her and say, look at me. Look at how good I am. I'm not going to treat you like that, baby. They don't respect that. And I'm not putting a woman down for that. I'm not saying, you know, that she's lower than you or she isn't good enough. I'm not putting her down. I'm saying that they simply cannot respect that. Some women need a guy in their life like an abusive, alcoholic, drug addicted. You think it's crazy and you think that I'm talking crazy. I'm not. It's the absolute honest to God truth. And the best thing you can do is walk away from that real fast, Charlie, because you got no chance. You got no chance at all.
I think that is absolutely... I want to make my point. A woman wants to be treated very well and sweetly and... Flowers?
Oh, flowers? Would you stop, please?
If you give her flowers... Why don't you want to believe that good treatment...
Margaret...
Hold on. That good treatment and real love can win out over all.
I just don't believe it. I mean, it's not that I don't believe in love. It's not that I don't believe in goodness and sweetness and light. And I'm sure that I'll get the emails, as I always do, from people saying, hey, let me tell you, Phil, let me tell you how my relationship is fantastic and my girl and this and that. And now we have a great... I mean, that's fine. You know, I'm not calling you a liar. And I'm not saying that I don't believe you. Sure, okay, I'll believe you. But I'll never, ever, as long as I'm alive... Whether I get 100 emails from people a day saying, oh, well, I had a chick in my life and she's now in my, you know, she's my wife and she got her ass kicked by her previous boyfriend, but now she realizes what a sweetheart I am. I don't care if I get 100 of those a day. I'm never going to believe it. Never.
That means you got a closed mind about it.
No, it doesn't mean I got a closed mind. You're going to hate this. It means that I know better.
Oh, you know me. Mr. Henry.
Well, man, that must be nice knowing everything.
Yeah, it must be nice knowing everything.
It must be really nice.
Knowing everything, yes. Don't you remember Holly Hunter in Broadcast News? The guy said it must be wonderful. It must be wonderful to know the answers and know what to do. She goes, no, it isn't. It's terrible.
What?
Never mind. The singer says that she made it clear that getting back together does not mean that she has accepted her beau's behavior 4 years ago. No, I didn't accept anything. I'm not accepting anything. If he throws me out of a car onto my chin out in the street one more time, I'm really going to get mad, she said. Her faith in the new beginning of the relationship is clearly how it's going to be and how she wants it to be. She wants marriage. They're making baby plans. She said, I made it very clear to Chris that if you were to take our child, our newborn baby, and toss the child from a car while speeding down PCH and looking at it bounce in the rearview mirror down the road, that would really make me angry and we'd have to talk about it, she said.
Let me see that.
Don't take that from me.
You're full of crap, Vincey. Nothing in here.
Well, do you think, man? Do you think maybe I was kidding?
Well, that was about as disgusting a thing as I've ever heard.
What did I say? Talking about a kid bouncing down the road.
Yeah, that's a baby, Phil.
What baby got hurt, man? Was there a baby that got hurt? I don't see a baby that got hurt.
Well, the virtual baby did.
Yeah. And you talk about Dave Baby Watkins. Let's talk about that for a minute. If you made a movie out of that and Dave Baby got involved, Dave Baby would probably charge a higher rate than most baby actors. Next thing you know, they bust the budget. You can't see the movies.
And you said all of that with a straight face, didn't you?
What's wrong with that?
First of all, I don't believe there's an actor named Dave Baby Watkins out there. First of all, that's what I believe in this Art Griego thing. Secondly, even if there was a cat named Dave Baby Watkins playing baby parts, that if there was a scene where Dave Baby Watkins' character got thrown out of a car and bounces down a highway, they'd probably use Bill Murray's famous stunt baby.
Yeah, stunt baby Saturday Night Live.
Right. And thirdly, and I do believe that if there was a guy named Dave Baby Watkins playing baby parts, there's bound to be a stunt baby out there somewhere. So I don't think it would bust the budget.
Well, you do have a point.
Yes, I do. Anyway, in conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, concerning this bit of news, Rihanna's faith in the new beginning of the relationship is clearly, well, as I said, it's clearly shown by what she has in mind, marriage and baby plans. And as she said, she doesn't want to see the kid bouncing down the street in a rearview mirror. So there you go, Rihanna and Chris Brown. But just remember what I said. Just remember what I said. You haven't got a prayer. You haven't got a snowball's chance in hell. Unless she's some kind of remarkable woman who's learned her lessons and suddenly realizes, you know, I've been barking up the wrong tree all these years. And, you know, living with a guy that, kicks me in the stomach, pulls my hair, throws me through a window, rolls me down the hill in snow, throws me into the trunk of the car, sets fire to the car as I'm handcuffed, allows me to finally, you know, pry myself free as I crawl to the nearest substation and ask for help. And then I say, by the way, can you give me a ride back home so I can be with my boyfriend at these times of trouble? Because I'm sure he's really upset over the fact that he set the car on fire with me in it.
Oh, Phil, you must think women are idiots.
I do not think women are idiots. No, I don't think women are idiots. No, I don't. I think women are hooked into that myth. Kiss enough frogs, you find a prince. They're not idiots. That's an archetype that women cannot escape. They can't get away from it. They'll never be able to get away from it because it's an ancient archetype. It's rescuing a man. It's kissing the frog and making a prince. It's not got anything to do with dumb. They're hooked into that. You know, we're always talking about guys, how we haven't got this, we haven't got that. Guys don't know this, guys don't know. Men are always going after women with big breasts. Guys are, you know, you can talk all you want about the things that men are, sort of hardwired into, but this is, you know. So you mark my words and take a look at Rihanna and Chris Brown and find out what happens there. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're going to take a break here. We'll be right back. Other news. Did we already talk to Art about the Bible? Yeah, we did. Okay. Art's not going to be watching the Bible because the torture scene is too much for him. Here's big news, folks. Kim Kardashian took her brother and sister out to lunch.
Wow!
That's it. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Truth is our bitch, so there's some truth that's a bitch. Here is more truth on the NASCAR circuit. We got Donica Patrick here, and according to this particular article, she is, you know, she's looking at the challenges this year in the NASCAR, you know, in the world of NASCAR, in stock car racing, the Sprint Cup Series. And right now, some people think that she deserves to be ranked in the top 10, which she is, given the points. The first race of the season being Daytona, and now the second race of the season there at Phoenix. Her coming out party at Daytona was impressive. She started from the pole, led five laps, and ran more circuits, 113 among the top three positions, than any other driver before finishing eighth. So what do you think about Danica Patrick and...
Well, I think that, this is my prediction. I think that Danica Patrick is a good race car driver, but I do not think she represents any large movement of women driving in NASCAR. I just don't think. I think it's going to be like soccer. And by that I mean, I think there will be this belief that there will be a flood of interest in automobile racing among young girls, women. And just as people thought there would be a flood of interest in soccer when it first started in the late 60s in this country, and I don't think it's going to be there, not for a long time.
Well, why are you saying that? Don't you think women want to drive a car fast?
Yeah, every woman I ever seen likes to drive it fast.
Driving a car fast in traffic doesn't necessarily equate to automobile racing.
Well, I would agree with Margaret. You know?
You do?
Yeah, I agree with Margaret because here's my feeling. I think that NASCAR, automobile racing, that sport represents an interesting challenge to women, and I think it's like the Mount Everest of sports for women. If I can climb that mountain, then I can say that I've climbed that mountain. Now,
what does that mean?
In other words,
climb that mountain. Say I'm gonna climb a mountain.
What?
Man, why'd you let him finish?
No, I just wondered what it meant.
I'm going to tell you, okay? Sitting there going, N-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n-n. Talk about mealy mouth.
Just let him finish, bud.
What I was going to say is it represents a challenge for women. Oh, wow, look at that, automobile racing. And I can do anything. This is times have never been better for women in terms of profession, in terms of what it is they want to do. And look at that, man, I can be a NASCAR driver. Now, how many women out there actually thirst to be NASCAR race car drivers? I have no idea. There may be a bunch. There may not be that many. May not be anything that's really occurred to a lot of women. I don't know. But it exists. Now, there's this young lady, Danica Patrick. She is now one of the elite. She is a member of a fairly elite group. And that is a group of drivers that drive professionally on the NASCAR circuit, the National Association of Stock Car Automobile Racing.
So that's what it stands for.
Yes. And when it comes to oval track racing in the United States, that is the creme de la creme, baby, along with IndyCar. But I would say that NASCAR is even more prestigious than IndyCar. IndyCar has its own prestige, but and even internationally, I think oval track racing, when it comes to that kind of car, is quite exciting. The speeds are incredible. The proximity of the automobiles that are racing is exciting and dangerous, and it's quite exciting for spectators. She's part of that elite. Now, when you say let's go up the mountain and let's plant our flag in Mount Everest,
well, now it's starting to get sexual and everything.
Why is it getting?
Bud, would you shut? What do you mean getting sexual?
Talk about planting a flag in it.
What's that got to do with anything?
Hey, bud, I'll monitor whether the show's getting sexual or not, okay?
You said you're going to climb it and plant a pole in it. That's all I'm trying to say. God, man, take a deep breath and figure it out, will you?
Your mind, bud, we already know, marinates in dung. We know that it marinates in farm dung. We know this, bud. So that when you hear a man say, I'm going to climb it and shove a pole in it, well...
Oh, is he convincing you now?
Well, that was graphic, Phil.
I never said anything like that. I never said anything like that.
I heard Mr. Henry said, he said, climb a Mount Everest and plant your flag in it.
I didn't say I'm going to climb it and shove a pole in it.
Well, same difference.
It is kind of the same difference.
You know, it's interesting how you started out seeing my way on this, and now you're agreeing with this moron.
Not a moron. Making a good point.
Oh, you're not making a good point. In any event, like Mount Everest, you can say that people have climbed Mount Everest and put their flag in it, but how many? How many? How many people are actually want to climb up that mountain? And I think the same thing's going to be with women. I don't think you're going to see stock car racing truly represented by lots of female drivers for a couple of generations. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think you're going to see the odd female, not even the odd female. I think it may get to the point annually you'll see 3-4 women who are considered to be among the elite. I think it'll expand from there. You've got one now. Anybody remember Janet Guthrie?
I remember Janet Guthrie. I don't know if she was NASCAR or not.
Janet Guthrie was an IndyCar driver. And so Janet Guthrie raced back before the Indy Racing League, back when it was still USAC. And those were the open-wheel cars that raced at Indy and these other USAC events.
What do you mean by USAC?
Yes, I was going to ask that. Phil, why do you get a frustrated look on your face? I'm just trying to monitor what you're doing. USAC, and then you're climbing something and shoving a pole up into it.
Man, I never said anything like that. You really want to take this into filth. United States Automobile Club.
Well, you say United States Automobile, you're making a lot of stuff up.
No, I'm not. And if you keep on butting in with your big fat mouth, I'm going to throw you out of here. United States Automobile Club. National Association of Stock Car Automobile Racing. SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, okay? IRL, Indy Racing League. Okay?
Well, you sound like you know what you're doing.
Thank you. Now, Janet Guthrie was a part of that. I don't know what the top finish was for Janet Guthrie. I do know that Janet Guthrie raced in USAC and finished a couple of Indy 500s, respectively, but I don't really know. And that was back in the early 80s. And then there was, I think there might have been the odd female. You know what's interesting? Nobody brings this up. Drag racing. Shirley Muldowney. Cha-Cha Muldowney is what they called her.
Well, see, I always thought that was rather sexy. Cha-Cha Muldowney. I think they had Shirley Muldowney because they needed to have that sexy cha-cha, you know, that a Hispanic cha-cha big-butted girl.
What's that got to do with her winning races?
Well, isn't stock car racing like wrestling?
No, it is not.
No, it isn't.
It's not.
No. It's got nothing to do with that. No. Are you saying that they set things up?
Yes.
No. No way.
I thought it kind of was, too.
No, that's a terrible thing to say. Drag racing is 100% legitimate. 1,000,000% legitimate.
Well, then why do they have people like Cha-Cha and the Mongoose and all of that stuff?
Because that's the nature of the... You know, drag racing started on the streets. And drag racing was a part of street culture. And you might even say that drag racing was a part of some gang culture. I mean, it came right out of youth street culture America. And so, naturally, there was all these nicknames and crazy-ass, you know, Big Daddy Roth cartoons. And it was a crazy, youth-oriented street kind of racing. And so I think you're going to see the nicknames like Cha-Cha and Mongoose and Big Daddy and all that stuff. That was just the nature, but it is entirely legitimate. And to say that it is like wrestling or, you know...
Well, the music's playing, and that generally means Dan thinks you're a liar.
No, it doesn't. It means we got a commercial break. All right, we're coming right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't go away. Don't go away.
Well, I don't know.
Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Now, you know, Dan and I were just talking here, and I don't think this is fair at all. You know, I don't know who these people think they are, these environmental groups. I'm a big, big fan. I am. I'm a big, big fan of keeping the air clean. And I'm not just talking, because I grew up in a city, Los Angeles, that has filthy air or had filthy air, and big strides have been made in L.A. now. You can, in the summertime, when it used to be just the nastiest ass weather you ever saw in your life, in the summertime, you can drive around in L.A. and you got nice clean air, and you know, some days it's not. But it's still a situation here in L.A. County, and I grew up in the armpit of the county, which is the San Gabriel Valley.
Oh, God, that is disgusting out there. You grew up there?
Yes. What do you mean? Come on, Mark. Don't talk about it like it's a sewer. I mean, it ain't Santa Monica, you know.
Well, I mean, you're out breathing the air up there. You are right. It is like an armpit.
Yeah, and an armpit has got B.O. And the thing you have to understand, Mr. Henry, is you're in B.O. Central.
If you got to talk B.O. Central, yeah. Oh, really? I'm in B.O. I don't live there anymore.
The fact of the matter is that the San Gabriel Valley is the B.O. It's the B.O. And I'm glad Bud put it that way. It is the very center of B.O.
Okay, I get it. Is your point to humiliate that area so much that what happens?
That they start to clean it up out there, Phil, because either they start cleaning it up or someone's going to take charge and do it for them.
Now, we're talking about dirty air. What are they supposed to do out there? L.A. County is what controls that. And I'm saying that it has been cleaner than it ever has been. What do you mean, B.O.?
That's what it is. San Gabriel Valley is the B.O., is a B.O. magnet.
That's a very good way of putting it, yes. And what I'm saying is this. It's a filthy, filthy area. The people are good people. There are beautiful homes out there. There's no question, Phil. The foothills are out there. Beautiful. But it is a fetid, funky, funky ass.
Jeez. You know, here's my response to that. It's been better now than ever before. The air is cleaner now than ever before. But we got all these. Would you call yourself one of these environmental Nazis?
I am very much on the warpath yet. Yes, I am.
Okay. Because what a lot of these environmental Nazis, well, excuse me for saying that.
No, that's all right. I'm proud of that. When it comes to being proud of the word Nazi, yes, I am proud of that aspect of Nazism.
Great. Because, you know, Nazis were not really environmentalists, but...
No, but we're talking about extremism.
Extremism in pursuit of what is right, I guess some people say, is no vice. But the point that I am trying to make here is that in the world of drag racing, in the world of street racing that became drag racing, there are all kinds of different vehicles that one can race. And some of these are emission standard cars. Some of these are 50s and 60s automobiles, that it is legal not only on the streets of California to run these automobiles with their original equipment. That is the emission control kinds of equipment on these cars. They don't have to exist to the extent that they do on other cars. You can run a dragster the same way, or rather a funny car or a stock, whatever it is that you're running on a drag strip, you can run that with its original equipment. Now, a lot of environmentalists look at that and they say, oh, that's bad. That's bad.
Well, it is bad, Phil.
It's not causing the smog pit out there in the San Gabriel Valley, okay? It's not causing the BO center that you guys are calling it. Drag racing does not amount to, in terms of pollution, drag racing is a symbol. It's not a major cause of pollution.
Phil, you just got done telling me before we went on the air that you grew up in the armpit of Los Angeles County. And you also said...
Yeah, this man. Yeah, right here. Yeah.
You also said that was a center of drag racing in Los Angeles. Didn't you say that, Mr. Henry?
What are you, giving a speech here in a courtroom or something?
Didn't you say that?
Yes, I did say that. Yes, I did. That's where a lot of drag racing takes place, out in East L.A. County. That's got nothing to do with the fact that there's all kinds of smog. They let them drag race out there because it's already a smog pit. And I think it's the biggest bunch of horse dung to say, well, now we better shut down drag racing because that causes pollution. All kinds of stuff causes pollution. all kinds of stuff. You know what else causes pollution? A lot of nonsensical driving, a lot of jive-ass bullcrap driving. If you want to shut down someone's amusement like drag racing, why don't you just shut down the number of times that people take a drive, the number of times that people are driving for no reason, the number of times that people are just skirting around town, one person to a car. I mean, there's all kinds of areas where you could cut back on frivolous, wasteful, and polluting driving.
Phil, you are not about to tell me or any member of my family when we are allowed to get into an automobile and drive, all right?
Well, then why do you get to tell some guy who, for sport, is drag racing? I mean, you know, these are people that are testing carburation and tires.
Oh, here we go again with the test pilots of the automobile business. Is that it?
Yeah, you're saying that. So what?
I'm saying that a guy in a drag on a drag strip, a car on a drag strip, is doing more good for society than some jackass taking a Sunday drive.
It's so vile, I would call it bigoted and racist.
What's racist about it?
Nothing, but it is offensive to that degree that I can't get in the car with my husband and son and have a pleasurable drive without being called vile names.
I didn't call you any names.
No, you didn't call me a name, Phil, but you're thinking filthy things about me.
No, I'm not.
What?
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, you are, Mr. Henry.
No, I am not. No, I am not. No, I'm not. I'm saying a guy on a drag strip does more good for society in terms of what he is finding out about that car, about the fuel, about the engine, about the moving parts, about the tires. What they're finding out on drag strips and on racetracks all over America does more good for this country than a jive-ass in his car driving around on a Sunday afternoon with nowhere to go, just, you know, burning up fuel and polluting the air. And you're trying to tell me that I didn't call anybody a name.
You just said a jive-ass, didn't you?
Yes.
That's racism. It's not racist.
No, it isn't racist. Why do you call it that? The point, all right, so I won't call the guy a name. Then some man driving around on a Sunday afternoon.
Well, you can't take it back now.
Yeah, you can. Because the point's still the same.
The point is still the same. So, you know, if you want to talk about, and I think it's pretty low, and it's so it's such an easy move, and it's controversial. That's why they do it. That's why they do it. That's why these environmental nuts, excuse me for saying that, that's why these environmental people, they choose a high priority, they choose a high-profile target, I should say, like drag racing, and they take it on, and they say it ought to be eliminated because they know it's going to get people interested and upset and angry, and suddenly it, you know, shines a big white-hot spotlight on their nonsense, and people get angry like I'm getting angry. Are you guys really serious about that?
Phil, if we are pushed to it, we're serious about a lot of things. If you insist, if you reserve the right to go out on a Sunday afternoon and sit there in your mother's galaxy or whatever, and you've got your hair in that processed pompadour, so you've got the jelly roll with the waterfall effect curl, the Chico Jr. boots, the Ford Galaxy with the real garbage pit drivetrain.
Yeah.
I mean,
since when did you all of a sudden get to know drag racing?
I know drag racing. Don't worry about it. I used to go out on amateur night, and the light turns green. You pop the clutch. The drivetrain hits the pavement. You've got to be pushed off the track. There goes another cloud of poison into the air. No. No, no. Not me. Well, you can laugh if you want.
That is about the most weird description. A guy with a jelly, or what? You know.
But to say it again, it's a guy with a processed pompadour with a jelly roll and a waterfall effect, Chico Jr. boots. He's in his mom's Ford Galaxy. He's got the drivetrain that when you pop the clutch, when the light turns green, the drivetrain hits the pavement.
And they have to push the car off the track.
Yeah.
That's a really pathetic thing that you just described there. Have you seen that?
Have I seen it? Get a load of him. Have I seen it? Just about every week when I was a kid.
Where?
Down at Lyons.
Down at Lyons. So you've lived around drag strips too, and you're saying that they need to be eliminated. I think it's almost like you're stabbing it in the back. And I think for every guy that you see that goes out there on amateur night and the drivetrain hits the cement and he's got to be pushed off the track, for every one of those guys, there are people that are making a success of it. And not only that, As I said, their successful driving leads to better passenger cars. And I challenge anybody taking a joyride on a Sunday afternoon to show that they're doing anything better. All right, coming back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on this Friday night, now Saturday morning. Some real, I mean, we're down to the bottom of the barrel. This has made headlines, man. The Kardashians go to lunch. I like that. I'm not going to make fun of that. That's, everybody's got to eat.
Yeah, well, especially when it comes to Kim Kardashian.
Anyway, we'll be back with that and other falderall on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is really creepy. A Florida man swallowed by a sinkhole. Did you see this?
What?
That's what the headline is. It's quite scary. A sinkhole that swallowed a Florida man when it collapsed the bedroom portion of his home overnight is extremely unstable and is expected to grow bigger and too dangerous for rescuers to approach, according to the Hillsborough County officials. Until we know where it's safe to bring the equipment in, we really are just handicapped and paralyzed and can't really do a whole lot more than just sit and wait, said Hillsborough County Fire Chief Ron Rogers. He was talking to reporters during the evening. It's a tough situation. It's even tougher for the family.
Oh my God, that is horrifying.
Absolutely horrifying. The hole that pulled in Jeff Bush, age 36, opened up at around 11 p.m. Thursday night in Sefner, Florida. Authorities said that would be 11. Excuse me. That was last night. This is Friday night, Saturday morning. Family members heard a sound that they described as a car crash emanating from the bedroom in the back of the house. The family rushed into the room where Bush was sleeping, according to ABC News Tampa affiliate WFTS-TV. All they could see was part of a mattress sticking out of the hole. Essentially, the floor of the room had opened up. God.
It's like that Twilight Zone.
No, that ain't like the Twilight Zone, okay?
The Twilight Zone with a little girl.
No, it's not. This is actually a real tragedy here, okay? Twilight Zone with a little girl. You think the guy got pulled into another dimension? This poor man, I hate to speculate, but if he got pulled down into a sinkhole, I mean, I don't see how the guy's alive. I'm sorry. I mean, it's possible, because I don't have any experience with this sort of thing, but the hole remained 20 to 30 feet wide this evening, officials said, but it had progressively deepened beyond the 20 feet seen earlier in the day. The soil cannot hold the slope that it is right now, said Larry Madrid, president of Madrid Engineering Group, which is a sinkhole expert called in by the county. Engineers feared a further sudden collapse because the house sat on fluid, sandy soil, and they remained uncertain about where the unstable area ended. God, that is just absolutely gruesome. Poor man. Author, another collapse could happen now. It could happen days from now, according to Merritt. It could happen slowly. It could happen quickly. The partially collapsed house and two neighboring houses have been evacuated. As items fall in from the house, they get pulled down in, according to Bill Bracken, an engineer working with the Hillsborough County Search and Rescue. Given the size of the hole, I cannot tell you why the whole house hasn't collapsed yet, but it has not. The instability meant rescuers were unable to continue searching for Jeff Bush within the house. As I told the family earlier, the only thing that could be worse than what they're feeling now for their loss would be to experience additional human loss. That's the dilemma, and the dilemma is a very painful dilemma for everyone.
Good God.
Yeah. Yeah. Phew. These sinkholes, and you hear about them in Florida and elsewhere, these are unpredictable things. Unpredictable things. Now, I know there are geological studies that can be made when you're talking about soil or the actual, soil or rock that you're building a house on, and you can see what you've got. I don't know what the law states in Florida, but I imagine it's similar. You've got to make sure that you're building on something solid, but I don't know how you predict these things.
It's like quicksand?
No, it's not like quicksand. It's different. This is a sinkhole. It's like a big subterranean hole that has finally expanded to the point where the soil above it is beginning to fall in. And you could go online and you can take a look at sinkholes. Just enter in sinkhole in a search engine, and all you got to do is hit images, and you're going to see some weird-looking stuff, man. I mean, huge sinkholes that have literally swallowed whole city blocks. So it's a scary thing. Family waits for word of Florida man swallowed by sinkhole. I just don't see how, this poor guy can be around. Jimmy Buffett's in the news. He is a professional musician, singer, songwriter, very big with my generation because, well, Jimmy sang of the joys of drinking margaritas and not working, and as far as I'm concerned, they don't get much better than that. And
well, they called them parrot heads, didn't they?
Yes, they call them. Jimmy Buffett's fans are parrot heads. And the reason why they're parrot heads is, I don't know, because of the whole Key West Florida thing. And just because of the whole Florida thing, but more to the point, the Key West thing, the tropical wild parrot, multicolored, weird-ass Ernest Hemingway thing.
What is that again?
It's a certain part of Florida that is more of a tropical, drink margaritas, maybe smoke a fat blunt, maybe not.
Oh, boy, you're going to get in trouble smoking a fat blunt.
Well, Bud,
you guys shut up. In any event, that's what Buffett represents, you know. And the parrot heads, the fan base of Jimmy Buffett's music, the fans that follow him around are everywhere. I was sitting in a bar in Minneapolis when I was working up there at WCCO. I was sitting in some bar in the warehouse district around the Target Center, which is where basketball and hockey and concerts, you know, it's a major downtown arena. In any event, as I'm sitting there, the place starts filling up with these parrot heads. And they start playing Jimmy Buffett music. Now, this is up in Minnesota. The guy's fans are everywhere. But these guys, and they're all ages, too. People in their 20s all the way up their 60s. And they're wearing hats with parrots on them.
Real parrots?
No, stuffed parrots. Fake parrots, you know.
It'd be fake parrots, bud.
I don't know.
Anyway, and they're dancing, and they're singing, and they're this, and they're that. And I'm telling you, around the corner comes a limousine, and the window rolls down, and it's Buffett. Now, this is one of those things that if you've been smoking too much weed or drinking too much, you'll generally hear some guy, and I swear to God, man, it was Jimmy Buffett. Are you sure? Yeah, I swear to you. You know, yeah, sure. But I'm telling you, I was stone cold sober.
Well, you said you were in there drinking.
I had just started, okay? I didn't care whether I saw Jimmy Buffett or not. I look, and there he is. I found out from other people later on, this Buffett does this all the time. He pulls up to some bar outside of where he's going to play. He waves at people, says hello, and then he speeds off. So, that's what happened there. And they went on, and I'm sure everybody had a great time. But here's the thing that I wanted to tell you about Jimmy Buffett. His name ain't Warren Buffett. And he does not own any newspapers. He certainly doesn't own one in Arkansas, which is why I got to thinking about Jimmy Buffett, a story about Warren Buffett.
Are you out of your mind, Hick?
That's what I'm going to do with that story. So anyway, let that be a lesson to you. Great being with you guys tonight, as usual. And we will be back on Monday evening. Yeah? And be looking forward to our next Bobby Dooley podcast. She will be on with Sugar Ray Leonard, the great former middleweight champion and Olympic champion. Bobby Dooley and Sugar Ray Leonard. That'll be rolling out next week. And, of course, more of our regular podcast. We've got two more podcasts we're going to be rolling out, one of which is going to be a video cast. That's exactly right. You will be seeing that turning up on the Sideshow Network as well. Visit us online at philhenryshow.com and get a backstage pass, too, because I'm telling you, without that, you just don't have a chance. You don't have a prayer. You don't have a prayer, a snowball's chance in hell of having yourself a couple of laughs in this here world.
That's the truth.
So go to philhenryshow.com with that backstage pass, and it'll hook you up to all kinds of wonderful things like our video cast, like our thousands of hours of archive material, like our daily show podcasts, it's like that there, man. Until Monday night at 10 o'clock on the Pacific Coast, 1 a.m. Tuesday morning on the East Coast, this is Phil Hendry for Dan Northcraft and all of the little people, you know who you are, saying let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry's wardrobe by the Phil Hendry online store.
Phil Hendry.